The following is a recording for development with the Israel Project on Monday, September 25th, 2017 at 12 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have all of our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn today's conference over to Julie Lenore. Ma'am, you may begin.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Israel Project conference call with Dr. David Hirsch. And David, thank you so much for being here with us today. It's a real pleasure. My name is Julie Lenart. I'm a senior fellow at the Israel Project, and I'm joined today by my colleague, Jacob Milner, who's a senior policy analyst at the organization. And the two of us will be moderating the call with David today. So what we're going to do is I will just very briefly introduce David so that you get a better idea of the work that he does. And we will then give the floor to David, and he will speak for 10 to 15 minutes about, you know, some of the issues that brought him here today. And then eventually you will have the opportunity to ask some questions. And before I begin, I would like to just say again that David has a new book out, which is called Contemporary Left Antisemitism, and a documentary called Whitewashed. And you find links to both the book and the documentary in the invitation that we send around, so make sure to check it out and buy David's book. So David Hirsch is currently a senior lecturer at Goldsmiths University, London, where he has been in the sociology department since 2003. In 2006 and 2007, David was a research fellow at Yale University in the United States, and he holds an MA in philosophy and social theory and wrote his PhD on crimes against humanity and international law. As a man of the left himself, David has been involved in the study of antisemitism on the left for a long time, and finally in September of this year, he published his long-awaited book, which brings together much of his previous writing and thinking on the relationship between hostility to Israel and antisemitism. The book includes chapters about the campaign to exclude Israelis from the academic, cultural, sporting, and economic life, and examines case studies of openly anti-Semitic discourse which have emerged out of anti-Zionism. A very important point that David makes, and perhaps we can speak about that in greater depth later on, is that anti-Semitism is not always straightforward, in the sense that you don't need someone walking down the streets in a Nazi uniform or have a swastika tattooed on his forehead, but that actually anti-Semitism is all around us, including in democratic spaces such as universities, churches, trade unions, and intellectual journals. Because of his strong commitment to Israel's security and his strong commitment to fight the boycott movement, David has founded a movement which is called Engaged. It's a campaign against academic boycotts of Israel, and the campaign tries to challenge the assumptions and misrepresentations that lie behind the boycotts movement. So, David, thank you again so much for being here with us today. I know David from my time in London, and I can assure you he's one of the most impressive and leading experts on modern-day anti-Semitism. We are super thrilled to have you here with us today, and with that, I give the floor to David. Hello, David.
Hi. What a fantastic introduction. Thank you very, very much. So, really, there are two things out there in the public domain that I'm talking kind of to today. As Julie said, one is my new book, which is called Contemporary Left Antisemitism, and the other is a project which is called Whitewashed, which includes a documentary film which is about 35 minutes long and is freely available on YouTube. And the Whitewashed project comes with a book of its own. So let me start by telling you about my book, and I'll tell you how it intersects with the Whitewashed project. So, My book really is a story of the mainstreaming of anti-Semitism, particularly on the left. When I started in activism in the National Union of Students in Britain, really in the 80s, so even then we were fighting battles over the banning of Jewish societies on campus. So some people on the left said, coming from the UN, actually, the UN Zionism equals racism idea, they said Zionism is racism and Jewish societies are Zionists, therefore Jewish societies are racist, therefore they should be banned from campus. So this was the battle that I remember kind of really learning about how all this stuff works in the 1980s. But the thing about that, I think, at that time was that this was a very kind of marginal discourse. This was something which was happening on, you know, strange little dusty corners of the far left, which was where I used to like to hang out at that time. Now, the story of my book today really is a story of how those ideas and those campaigns, the campaigns that said Zionism is racism and Nazism and Zionism is something really central to the global system of oppression, those ideas moved from the very margins into the mainstream. And so that's where we are at the moment, I think. The book begins with Ken Livingstone, who is a pretty well-known figure on the British left. He's been the mayor of London twice. Before that, he was he had a position which was kind of similar in the 1980s. And Ken Livingstone himself has been involved in this kind of politics for a very long time. And one of the reasons why I start the book with Ken Livingstone is because I actually named a particular phenomenon after him, which I think is very important. Let me tell you the story. So the story is really a nothing story. It's a trivial story. Ken Livingstone was at a party. He came out of the party, and there was a journalist waiting. And the journalist said to him, can you give me a quote, please? How was the party? And Ken Livingstone kind of got cross. He didn't want to be, you know, interviewed late at night, although, in fact, his people had promised the journalist a quote. Ken Livingstone was grumpy, you know, fine. Maybe he was a little drunk, fine too. He'd been in a party. But he sort of growled at the journalist, and the journalist said, come on, I'm only doing my job, give me a quote. And Ken Livingstone kind of tagged himself onto this phrase, I'm only doing my job, and he said to the journalist, you're just like a German war criminal. And the journalist said, no, you know, don't be silly, I'm Jewish, I don't like being called a German war criminal, and I just need a quote about the party. And then Livingstone launches into a tirade about how his newspaper had supported fascism in the 1930s and a whole load of kind of quite inappropriate stuff. Now, one would think that in the morning, Ken Livingstone would wake up, you know, with a bit of a sore head, and he'd think, oh no, what did I say last night? I said stupid things, and, you know, some people might think that kind of the persistent calling of the Jewish journalist a German war criminal might be anti-Semitic. I'll apologize. But he didn't apologize. What he said instead was he wrote a piece in the Guardian, and he said, for far too long, people who are critical of the Israeli government, as I have been accused of anti-Semitism. And I saw this formulation of his, and I thought, I recognize this. And it is really what makes life so difficult if you want to take anti-Semitism seriously. Because people who raise the issue, if you raise it in a political forum, or if you even raise it in an intellectual or an academic forum, very often the assumption is that the person who raises the issue of anti-Semitism is doing so simply to silence the free speech of a person who's critical of Israel. And instead of being able to have a discussion about what is anti-Semitic and what isn't, or, you know, a rational discussion, so for example, you might think that the BDS movement or the movement for an academic boycott of Israel has anti-Semitic undertones. You might think that to say that Israelis and only Israelis should be prohibited from coming onto our campus in London or in New York or in California, you might think that that has an anti-Semitic effect example, possibly a cause, and you raise the issue and you're told no. You're told there's a kind of complete denial and counter-accusation of bad faith. So this is what I call the Livingston formulation. So my first chapter of my book tells you a little bit of the story of Kennedyson and his politics, but then it describes the Livingston formulation, which I think is really the key mode of anti-Semitic bullying that Jews face within the progressive movement and on campus. So whenever, well, actually not only Jews, of course, other people too who raise the issue of anti-Semitism are very often confronted with this response. And the response doesn't say, oh, I think you've made a mistake, or I think you're a little oversensitive. It doesn't even say, I think you've got a chip on your shoulder. What it says is, you're lying. You see what I mean? What it says is, you're only pretending to think that there's an issue of anti-Semitism here, because really what you're trying to do is mobilize the kind of Jewish power which comes from Jewish victim status in order to silence people who are critical of Israel. Let me move on to where the book goes from there. The book then looks at the mainstreaming of this kind of politics of hostility to Israel and to the Jews who are accused of supporting it. And it looks at the rise of this kind of faction into the leadership of the Labour Party and the Labour movement. And this leads us to the material of the film Whitewashed, which you can look at on YouTube. So what happened were two things happened, really. One is that this way of thinking and this kind of anti-Semitic edge to the hostility to Israel was represented by the leader of the Labour Party. So it became something that was kind of that the press and the media were interested in. And at the same time, lots and lots of people who came from this kind of far-left politics were now moving into the Labour Party. And it was really quite easy for the media and for a certain number of bloggers to find a whole number of incidents of anti-Semitism within the Labour Party. So they would find quotes. They would find, you know, one old Marxist who was now a member of the Labour Party who would say, we need to reopen the Jewish question. Or they find somebody else who retweets a map from Norman Finkelstein, who you'll know about in the United States, which hoped to move all the Jews from Israel into actually somewhere near Nebraska in the United States. Well, a whole number of things came into the mainstream. And it began to look quite bad for the new leadership of the Labour Party. And what they did was they called this inquiry into anti-Semitism. And they said, we're going to ask a kind of well-respected figure to do this inquiry. Now, the movie and the Whitewash Project brings together, the book from the Whitewash Project brings together the submissions written by a whole number of people to explain what was happening within the Labour Party and why the inquiry should be worried and what the inquiry might say and how the inquiry should understand contemporary anti-Semitism. And many of the people who wrote these submissions, which were invited, felt that in the end the inquiry didn't take them at all seriously. So the book and the movie is an attempt really to give a voice to the people who wrote those submissions. That will become clear if you watch the movie. So that's chapters 2 and 3 of my book, really, is how it came right into the mainstream in British politics. The book then goes on to go backwards, and it looks more at the kind of roots of this, partly in the struggles over the academic boycott of Israel within the University and College Union, and then it describes how that struggle really culminated in a court case, and it looks at a lot of the evidence and what happened in the court case. It also examines the complexities and the debates around how to define anti-Semitism, and the EUMC, the European Union Monitoring Commission, definition of anti-Semitism, which later became the State Department definition and later became the IHRA definition, and the way in which defining anti-Semitism itself came to represent the kind of really awful polarization around how people think about these issues. And it relates also to the kind of black-white binary. So I know, especially in America, of course, race and racism is a really serious and divisive issue. And the question really is, how does anti-Semitism fit into the fight against racism? And it couldn't be more polarized there either. So you had this sort of tradition, you had a civil rights tradition, for example, of Jews and black people joining together to fight both racism and anti-Semitism, and it's a very kind of proud and strong tradition. But later, for example, at the World Conference Against Racism in Durban, what you found was a different way of configuring these two issues, and you found a kind of really rather successful campaign by certain supporters of the Palestinians to define Zionism itself as the key form of racism in the world. So instead of saying that the fight against anti-Semitism and the fight against racism was really one fight, some people began to say that actually the fight against racism was also a fight against Zionism. So the book goes into some of those discussions. The book goes on really to offer a critique of anti-Zionism itself. And it goes on to talk a little bit about me and my experiences of being involved in this work. I think I've talked for a few minutes. I'm very happy to answer people's questions or to take the discussion further.
All right. Well, thank you very much, David. Samantha, would you mind telling the audience how to ask a question and get in the queue?
Yes, sir. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touch-tone phones now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, just press star 2. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time.
Great, thank you. And while people are getting in the queue, David, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk about this important issue. I know here in the United States we see sort of the creeping acceptance of anti-Semitism in the form of anti-Zionism certainly moving into the mainstream more than we'd like. And I wanted to know, in your opinion, what has caused, certainly in the past, at least in my experience, probably a decade or so, this to become more and more of an acceptable trope in public discourse?
Well, I think that's a difficult question, really. I mean, I think there is a wider and wider kind of view of Israel as being key to everything that's bad in the world. So all previous anti-Semitic movements sort of placed the Jews at the center of everything bad in the world. And you now have a worldview which says that capitalism and imperialism and modernity are really key to everything bad in the world. And there are some people who place Zionism kind of at the very center of that understanding of the world. So I mean, it's difficult for me to explain to you why this problem has got worse. Really, what I do is kind of look at the problem and look at the anatomy of the problem, and also notice that it has been gradually moving into the mainstream. I mean, in the United States, some of the scholarly organizations, like the Modern Language Association, or even the Association of Historians, or the American Studies Association, have been racked with, you know, really serious campaigns to exclude Israelis from their own disciplines in America. So I think, you know, this mainstreaming is important. I would also say that that another thing that I'm worried about, which is, seems to be quite particularly clear and particularly current in the United States at the moment, is that the people on the left have kind of suddenly discovered right-wing anti-Semitism. And the people on the left have suddenly, you know, they saw Charlottesville, and they were rightly, absolutely appalled that you know, the Nazis were marching on a synagogue and singing the Jews were not racist, and they were also, they had quite a sophisticated political analysis, and they felt that the Nazis had felt themselves to be kind of empowered and emboldened by the White House and by its connections to the so-called white nationalists and by the rather ambivalent response that came to it from the White House. So the left has discovered a kind of mainstreaming of that kind of politics in America, and I think they're quite right, by the way, while the right has discovered left-wing anti-Semitism, and the right looks at left-wing anti-Semitism also with some sophistication, and it sees not only, you know, movements like Hamas and Hezbollah, but it also sees the ways in which those movements are kind of legitimized and emboldened in the mainstream on the left. And it seems to me really worrying that the same people have a very sensitive and sophisticated understanding of the anti-Semitism within the political communities that they hate anyway, but when it's within their own political family, they find it really difficult. And so this worries me kind of both on the right and the left, and it seems to me that if you only oppose anti-Semitism amongst the people you really dislike anyway, then you're not really opposing anti-Semitism. You know, my book and the struggle that I've been involved in for 15 years or for 25 years, depending on how you count it, is about the anti-Semitism around me, within my own political community. And it seems to me really quite menacing when some people have a real, you know, sensitive, sophisticated nose for anti-Semitism over there, but they can't see it over here. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I think that that's the problem we're all dealing with right now. And I know we have a few questions in the queue, so I will let the operator get those out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Our first question will come from Eugene Cornell.
Hi, I wanted to know what is going on with anti-Semitism and the right wing in Germany and Sweden. Some of those parties seem to like Israel, and they don't seem to be anti-Semitic, and other ones seem to be very anti-Semitic. What might be going on there?
Hi, the question was about right-wing anti-Semitism in Sweden, yeah?
Germany and Sweden.
Okay.
Right. I guess the question is, what is the position of the extreme right in Germany and in Sweden on Israel and on Jews?
Okay. Look, I can answer that in some very, very general terms, but I don't have any specialist knowledge on the far right and the anti-Semitic right in Sweden and in Germany. I do think that the right, that there's a kind of a mainstreaming of the sort of far right, and there's a mainstreaming of notions like xenophobia and racism all over Europe. And in the United States, that there are kind of discourses and ways of thinking and politics which would not have been felt respectable in the mainstream 10 years ago or even 3 years ago, which are now felt respectable. I mean, you know, for example, some of the discourse that we saw in America about Mexicans and about Arabs and about Muslims, and certainly there is a very far-right party in Germany which is won a number of parliamentary seats for the first time, I think, since the war. And this is a worry. There's a far-right presence in Sweden. Of course, in Britain, we have our own issues with the Brexit movement, which really, I mean, amongst a number of other things, pushes the line that the problems that we face in Britain are really to do with foreigners. Foreigners telling us what to do and foreigners over here taking our jobs. So I think there's a rise of a kind of populist politics, and I think there's a link between the ways in which anti-Semitism is kind of licensed and legitimated on the left and also things that are happening on the political right. But I don't have expert, you know, specific knowledge in Germany and Sweden, so I wouldn't want to say more really about that.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Sheldon.
Hello. Yes, I'm interested in understanding what responses you're seeing, David, in your community, your academic community, and I would say even the mainstream academic community, what kind of responses are you seeing to your writings?
Well, I think it's been very difficult. Of course, there are always allies, and there are always people who really welcome it and who love it and who are very excited about it, and people who feel that some of what I do kind of really articulates how they feel. And so that nothing is monolithic. There have always been allies. There are also very many people who, I felt, you know, quite a kind of significant and immediate change, really. I have a job in, you know, one of the coolest sociology departments in Britain. I was sort of 14 years ago, I was a bright young thing in sociology. I've just written a prize-winning book, and I was considered to be a kind of sociologist with great potential. But when I started writing about anti-Semitism and when I started writing about BDS, many people sort of stopped thinking of me in that way and thought of me not as a sociologist but as a sort of Zionist sociologist. And what that means in their kind of language is a sort of racist sociologist and apologist for you know, for apartheid and for foreign powers and all of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the ways in which people responded to my academic work was really along those lines. I've done some work as an expert witness in some South African hate speech trials. And it's interesting because you get a kind of polarization, a disagreement about Zionism. So, you know, the Jews in South Africa are likely to say, you know, Zionism is the national liberation movement of the Jewish people. And the anti-Zionists are likely to say, Zionism is racism, Zionism is apartheid, and all of that kind of thing. And the judge will look at me over his glasses and say, well, what really is Zionism? And one of my responses to that is, in a sense, it doesn't matter what Zionism really is, because what matters is what is meant by Zionism by the people who are in a position to construct you as one. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Racism constructs race, and anti-Zionism, if we allow it to construct Zionism, will construct it as something, you know, awful and disgusting and dishonest and racist and all the rest of it. There's a story which is in the book about a journalist called Nick Cohen, and it might surprise some people listening that Nick Cohen is not Jewish. He's not at all Jewish. He's not, you know, not a Jewish father, not a Jewish mother. Nick Cohen is not Jewish. But he started writing some things in his column in the Guardian newspaper about the Gulf War and about the Iraq War and about Israel-Palestine. And he started getting all this anti-Semitic abuse. He started getting, you know, hundreds of emails saying, you only write this because of your tribe and all this kind of thing. And Nick Cohen would say, well, look, I'm not Jewish. So how can it possibly be, you know, how can that possibly make any sense? And after, I think, actually literally years of this sort of anti-Semitic abuse, Nick Cohen, in the end, he said, it began to shame me. It began to shame me to keep denying that I was Jewish. And he said, well, so I became Jewish. So Nick Cohen became Jewish. He stopped denying being Jewish, and he, you know, he took the identity that was sort of put onto him by the anti-Semites, and he said, fine, fair enough. So I think that it's this constant accusation of bad faith, really, that does for us. You know, it isn't that people in academia said to me, oh, well, I think you've made a misjudgment. I think you've marshaled the evidence in a slightly wrong way. I think you've come to a wrong conclusion. It wasn't that. It was this relentless accusation of bad faith, this relentless accusation that you're a kind of agent of a foreign power, and the foreign power is very powerful and very global and very, very menacing.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our last question will come from Cheryl.
Yes, hi. At the beginning of the conference call, it was mentioned that you're involved with a group or have established a new group called Engage. Can you tell us about that a little bit more?
Sure. Well, in fact, Engage is not new. We set up, within my trade union, the trade union which represents university and college workers, in 2003, can you hear me? Okay. In 2003, there was a motion to boycott Israeli universities. So we set up, you know, really in an ad hoc way, we set up a network and a website to oppose that and to argue against it and to organize the opposition to it. And it was called Engage. If you look at the website, Engage Online, engageonline.org.uk, you'll find the website. And so we sort of set up a kind of rebuttal website and a blog and a network, and we really took that fight into the union. But I think in the end we lost, really. You know, in the end, by 2008, there were no Jews left within the decision-making structure of the union willing or able to oppose the BDS movement. They had either been kicked out or bullied out, or, you know, they were just completely fed up. And, you know, we lost that fight, really, but we sort of put together a way of thinking and a politics and a campaign that was quite influential. In America, there's a network called the Academic Engagement Network, which was partly modeled on Engage, which has done terrific work in defeating the boycott movement in some of the academic scholarly organizations. So that's what we did. You can still see the Engage website. It's not quite as busy and active and as it once was, but it still exists. And in a sense, my book is a kind of collection but a distillation of a lot of the stuff that we worked through in the Engage Network and the Engage campaign.
Wonderful. Well, David, I want to take a moment and just thank you for all of the work that you've done to expose the anti-Semitism here. I encourage everyone to take a look at your book. I think that would be very helpful to all of us to learn more. And I want to thank you once again, and I want to thank everybody for taking the time to call in today. I would be remiss to say if I didn't mention that our fiscal year at the Israel Project ends on Friday, and we can't do our great work without your help. So please consider a donation at theisraelproject.org/donate. That would be very much appreciated, and your generosity helps us continue to do the work that we're trying to accomplish. And so thank you all. Thank you to Julie, and thank you, David, for all of your
Thanks
work.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.